Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a talk by the Honorable Tom Hanifin, retired mayor of the city of Council Bluffs, Iowa. Mayor Hanifin has been Council Bluffs mayor for 28 years. His tenure as mayor ended last Thursday when Republican Matt Welsh was sworn in as the newly elected mayor of Council Bluffs. Mr. Hanifin will talk about his years in public office, both on the Council Bluffs City Council and as mayor. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, November 21, 2013, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Betty Davis, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
This is the Honorable Tom Hanifin, Mayor, City of Council Bluffs. And it's very appropriate that we should be here on the 22nd floor of First National Center to look out over Council Bluffs, the eastern shore of the Missouri River, and to see the pedestrian bridge, which leads, the Bob Carey Pedestrian Bridge, which leads now to Tom Hanifin's River's Edge Park. He's had more than just that as a legacy, however, for Council Bluffs. He's had 30 years of civic service, beginning first in the city council. They then appointed him to the position of mayor. He later ran on his own, most often without opposition. They liked him. He was not controversial, at least I don't remember any controversy. But he's a good guy, and you not only see him having fair play in the courtrooms, you might say, the courtrooms of Council Bluffs, public opinion. You also saw him at high school refereeing games. So this is the fellow that knows fair play, and to Omahans, he's a hero. Many years ago, in the mid-1850s, there was a prophecy as someone stood on what is now Capitol Hill, where Central High School stands, the highest point in downtown Omaha. And they prophesied that as they looked over Council Bluffs and saw the candlelights and the fires and looked around them in Omaha, that someday this would be a great community. Well, indeed, it took 150 years to do it. But Tom Hanifin, I think, is the man that brought that prophecy together. So it's my great pleasure, as a resident of Council Bluffs, in addition to that, to introduce Tom Hanifin, the mayor of Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Also, my campaign director. Well, thank you. And when I was asked to do this, it's kind of interesting because I remember when I got my face on the barroom floor, and we had quite a night that night over here. We ran out of beer, and the bartender said, I didn't know there was that much beer could be drank. And I said, well, most of my friends drink beer, so, you know, you better load up. And they didn't quite do it, but... it's been an interesting run. You know, it's kind of interesting as you look out. You know, obviously you see the Union Pacific there, and off to the right, that's where my grandfather, my dad, two uncles, and myself, we all worked at the railroad down the shops. My dad got me a job when I was 16, so I knew this area very well. My dad worked for the railroad for 40 years, just as my grandfather did, just as my uncles did, and I was the only one that left a little early, so I didn't get to have the opportunity. But my wife ended up working at the UP and retiring from the UP, so that has been a tradition in our family. And looking across into Council Bluffs is kind of interesting. When you talked about the Bob Carey Bridge, I've got a photo of Bob Carey, Mike Fahey, and myself in my office the day that we opened up the bridge. And for those who remember those times, a little controversy whether how we could spend that much money on a bridge that didn't go anywhere. and it worked both sides. So anyway, Fahey and I and Bob Carey standing on the bridge getting our photos taken. And I saw that, and we have that photo. But I said, isn't that kind of interesting, three Irishmen standing on the bridge in the middle of somewhere not going anywhere. I said, that's pretty typical. So, you know, that was interesting. And so then Fahey called me. He said, how do I get to this Tom Hannafin Park? And I said, what you do is you get on Mike Fahey Drive, you go over Bob Carey Bridge, and you're right on the Hannafin Park. He said, this is amazing. But, you know, in the 20, you know, actually, I guess it is. I'm in the 29 years. I was a young man doing a lot of things in the community that I thought were good. I got involved in with children right after I got out of college. I got married shortly after I got out of college. I actually married my high school sweetheart. We've been married for 44 years, I think. Between 44 and 43, I can't remember. Somewhere in that area. But it's a long time. And came back to Council Bluffs. Started getting involved with kids, did a lot of work coaching and working with children in our in the old neighborhood. I didn't have children at the time. Got involved with the YMCA. Had a couple incidents happen that really kind of changed what I thought was going on. I was coaching these kids, and my folks went out of town on a meeting. And two of the kids that I was coaching actually broke into my folks' house and took stuff out of the house. And my brother, who was friends of theirs, couldn't understand how two friends of his could walk in the house. And they said, you know, what's going on? Something's not right here. And so we got involved in trying to change the community, getting kids to do something differently. And a good friend of mine and I started a basketball program at the Y's in the 70s. And we had 60 kids when we started, and the day we walked out, we had 700. We built a program up that allowed children to have an opportunity to play ball, learn how to be athletes, number one. And it grew way beyond our expectations. And so all of a sudden, I'm on the YMCA board. I'm on the Optimist Club. I'm doing these things. I've got young family at home. I said, you know, this isn't the same town I grew up in. Maybe it was, but I just didn't remember how I got there. And so I decided to run for office. First time I ran for office, I was told I was 81. They said, yeah, you can't win. Number one, you live in the west side of town. Number two, you're not affiliated with the Chamber of Commerce. And number three, you don't know the right people to talk to. And so that was like a red flag for me to say that. You know, you can't. And so what I did was got all the kids that I coached in soccer, that I refereed, that I had in football, that I had in basketball, and the neighbor kids, and I gave them these little flyers, and they ran around all the neighborhoods of Council Bluffs, putting them up, vote for Tom. And it worked. So all of a sudden I get elected on the city council for 4 years. We thought we were doing some really good things. We really thought there were some changes happening, and it got better. And then all of a sudden I got to a point, I had 4 years, married, kids growing up, refereeing, coaching. I said, you know, maybe it's time for me to kind of step back from being a city council member. And then I did. And then in 86, the city voted to change the form of government city manager form of government to strong mayor. And in 88, I decided to run at that election. The interesting thing is if you look back, Omaha was going through kind of a transition. They were trying to throw the mayor out, and we were trying to bring one in at the same time. So actually there had been people that talked about looking at a city administrator form of government in Omaha. And in Iowa, of the large cities in Iowa, we're the only strong mayor form of government. Everybody else had city manager. So as I always said, you know, I get elected on Tuesday night, and I've said this many times, and then all of a sudden I went to work. Then all of a sudden on Wednesday I found out how really stupid I was and really didn't know what government was about. You know, you can go on that trail and you can say a lot of things. And you say, you know, we're going to do this and I'm going to do that and we're going to do this. And all of a sudden you walk in, you find out what you can't do. You know, you talk to the finance director and he said, no, you can't do that. That's it goes to the bond of the people. You can't be spending that money. I wanted to fix all the streets. Well, we can't do that because we don't have a plan. We don't have everything in place and it costs so much money. You know, you want to cut crime down and say, well, you know, if we hired 150 cops, we might be able to get that done. Or you want to have a better fire service or whatever it would be. There's always someone there or something there that stops you. And so what happened in the 80s, obviously the community was making a decision it was time to change. So they changed the form of government from a city manager to a strong mayor. I just happened to be the guy that stepped in at that time. So what's good news is that people wanted a change. They wanted to be different than what they were. And then we had started back in the 80s. There were a couple things that happened. The old mall on Madison Avenue, Mall of the Bluffs, had been built in 1986. Our retail was negative about 27% before that. So what that meant was not very many people in Council Bluffs shopped in Council Bluffs. Literally nobody from Western Iowa stopped. They just kept going through. And nobody from Omaha shopped in our area. It's just the way it was. And so when Midlands Mall, or excuse me, Mall of the Bluffs opened, it created a new atmosphere, a new opportunity. And we had started that in 1984. The second thing was I was on the steering committee for Iowa West. And Iowa West was a group of people that just said, you know, we need to form some kind of an organization to do something to make it better for people who live in Iowa and in our western part of the state. And so that group started, and by gosh, in 1986, they built a dog track that, you know, really started things changing a little bit. And then all of a sudden, we got some money in the pot, we the board, and we couldn't spend it fast enough. I mean, you know, I said, you know, we're on this board, you know, we've said we're going to spend this money, and people would walk in the door, and they needed the grant, we give them the money, you know, $10, $20, $100, $500, take it, you know, we want to get rid of it. We think it's going to make a difference, and we did it in Omaha and in Council Bluffs. And so that kind of started changing what our community, really, I think the people of the community really wanted something different. And then what we did was we started putting a plan together that we needed to find out what people really wanted. So we go to neighborhood meetings, and when I say we, it would be staff members and citizens of Council Bluffs, council members, walk into neighborhoods and sit down and say, okay, we're here. We want to hear what you got, you know, what you'd like to talk about. And so it was amazing to hear each and every, you know, there might be a neighborhood of five people. There might be a neighborhood with 20. There might be a neighborhood with 60 or 70. But they would sit down and say, these are the things we think we need to do to make it better in our community. And economic development, obviously, better jobs, better paying jobs were always one of those. A better street system or sewer system, you know, combined sewers was a problem we had at that time. We needed to have better shopping and opportunities, better quality parks, and a new library was always something that was out there. So as we went through that process, we kind of sat down and said, you know, the theme is pretty much the same, is that we've got to work on our infrastructure, and we've got to build our quality of life, and people are willing to spend their time and effort and support if we do that. And Don Gross, who's the community development director, came over to my office one day. He said, you know, I got a heck of an idea. He said, we haven't built a very many homes in town, and we've got a lot of empty lots out there in some neighborhoods that are a little tired. And he said, I got this program that we can get some money to build new homes, what we call the infill housing project. So we said, well, let's start out, see if we can do it. So we had 10 homes. Went into neighborhoods that were a little tattered and opened up and got the houses started. Now we're about 500 homes later in the community. Those 10 homes really changed neighborhoods. If you go back and look at the neighborhoods that we went into, they actually have added value and strengthened the neighborhood. I look at calls for service. You know, I used to say in this area, this is a tough area where we got a lot of calls for service. Police and fire would have to be there all the time. You go back and look at those neighborhoods today, we don't have very many calls. It's just changed the complexion of the community. Worked with a number of staff members over the years to make differences. You know, they really cared. And then 6 months into my career, I'm sitting in my office talking to six women about women's rights, and all of a sudden I see the tree out in front of my office bend over, and the wind started blowing, and I went up and looked out the window, and I saw the aerial that went to our 911 center at the county courthouse fall down, and we had a tornado roll through town. And so and our city attorney walked over and said, you know, we got a problem. We got four tornadoes just hit Council Bluffs, and you're now in charge. And I went, oh, boy, you know. You know, they didn't give me the book on being in charge. So we walked over there, and we opened up our emergency room, sat down, and we started, because we had no communication, because the 911 center was gone, we would send people out with radio or with cameras to take pictures of the damage around town, and then they'd bring it back, and they'd say, okay, we've got damage in this area. What are we going to do? And so we were able to put together a plan in a very short period of time and get things done. And I remember walking through neighborhoods, and it was always interesting to me because, you know, whenever a tornado or a damage, they always say, you know, there's going to be people come in and try to loot and steal and rob, and there are going to be bad people out there. You walk in the neighborhoods. I'd be out there at 2 o'clock in the morning and walk through the neighborhoods. People are living right there. They don't have any electricity. Their house is in shambles. They're sitting there with a barbecue grill and drinking a beer saying, hey, this is our house. We're not leaving, and nobody's causing any trouble in my neighborhood. And it was remarkable the amount of support that we got from across the Midwest, City of Omaha, Union Pacific, off at Air Force Base, volunteers from all over the Midwest that came and helped us clean the city up. And I went, gosh, you know, this isn't bad at all. And what happened was, as I made a comment, it was about people helping people made a difference. We got through a tragedy in a very short period of time because people spent their time and effort to make a difference. And it was a metro change. It wasn't just us versus them. It was all of us got to make it happen. And that kind of changed the complexion of what happened in the community. I think all of a sudden we got a light went on that, you know, we can make a difference. We are part of the metropolitan area, and people do care about people. In that time of the tornado, a couple funny things happened. We had to put a perimeter around the west side of town, and that's where I lived. My son was playing high school baseball, and I wasn't living at home at that time. I was living in the basement of the courthouse. That was basically what happened. My wife would bring me clothes. I'd take a shower. And we controlled the media at that time. Yeah. We'd say a press conference going to be at 8 o'clock in the morning. They'd all be there. We'd tell them some story, and then they'd go on. They'd be back at noon, and then we'd tell them another story. And we'd be back at 5, and we'd tell them another story. But, you know, the media really did make a heck of a difference. You know, without that, we couldn't have got through it. But I remember getting towards – but my wife calls me about 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. My son is playing ball down in Clarinda. I couldn't go to the game. It was a district game, and so – she called and she said, I can't get in the house, or I can't get in the neighborhood. I forgot my card. I said, you forgot your card. I said, you know, you can't do that. She said, then all of a sudden the police chief sitting next to me, he said, well, should we go down and give her a new card? And I said, no, let's just talk to the National Guard. So they let her into the neighborhood, and I told her, never forget that she got in because of me. And and as this perimeter was shrinking down, we'd had the National Guard there, and we'd have about 200 or 300 National Guards people that had gone in, and we worked in neighborhoods because, you know, they would be there with their equipment, and they'd stand around and make sure things happen. And so every day the media would say, how many guardsmen do you have today? And we'd say 200. And so I kept saying 200 for about 3 weeks. And so it was really kind of funny. It was last day the guardsmen were going to be here, and they said, how many you got? And I said, 200, and went out, and there were two. We had put one truck at one end of town and one at the other, and they were 200. But that was an interesting – it was always interesting to me how – because the change in what's happened with the media is, obviously, you know, we have Twitter and tweet and cell phones and – the cell phone I had at that time was about that big and lasted about 10 minutes, so it didn't work very well. But as the community started changing, you know, we did some great things. We passed a 1 cent sales tax. As a sales tax that goes directly into streets and sewers, and our combined sewers took us 15 years to get them done, but they're done. And people were willing to spend, make sure that that happened. That was a vote of the people. Our retail started picking up. We got some great investors in the community that came forward to really start building houses and changing the complexion of the community. It's been always a partnership. It's always been with the schools. It's always been with the city. It's always been with the county. It's always been with the people. That was kind of the style. The staff members, some of them are here today, have really done a wonderful job of trying to get things done. But every once in a while, they don't tell me the whole truth. You know, they they come up with an idea, and they said, what do you think of this? And I'd sit there and ponder. Hell, they'd already done it 3 weeks ago. So they didn't. But it's been a remarkable. And then the casinos came, and this is a great story. I had a guy walk into my office, and it was just before council meeting. He said, you remember me? I'm Vern Welch. I used to be your neighbor. I live right across the street from you. And I said, yeah. I remember the Welch family. Vern was a little older than I was. When he got out of high school, he was gone, didn't come back. And he said, we'd like to build a casino in Council Bluffs. I said, okay. You know, you do? Yeah, we want to build this. We want to do this. And I'm sitting there going, you got to be crazier than a loon. You know, I mean, what he was talking about. So he said, do you have any sites? And I said, yeah, we have a site. We have some sites. And I thought, we'll see how far these guys from Vegas with all our room from Nevada with all this money have. So I took him to Stink Creek. And Stink Creek is is an area that 60% of the storm sewer water in Council Bluffs would go into this one creek area. And then when the levee gates would open, it would eventually get into the river. And so all this water would pour down. Why we call it Stink Creek? Because when I was a kid, as soon as it rained, we'd run down to Stink Creek, and then we'd get wiffle balls and baseballs and softballs, whatever would come out of the sewer system, we'd get. If it was today with 5 cent cans, we'd really make a fortune, but we didn't that. So I take this guy down there and this whole group, and I said, you know, this is, he said, great, what a great spot. He said, this is wonderful. It'll work out perfect. And I said, okay, you know, that's a heck of a deal. And so eventually they bought Stink Creek, and the Chamber of Commerce really didn't like me telling that story, you know, that we had that. But that changed the complexion of the community also. Now, you look back, created 2,300 jobs in the community that really made a difference to the metro area. About 60% of those jobs were people who live in the Omaha metro area, or Omaha and Nebraska. And it created a different energy. When we sold Stink Creek, we didn't sell it for cash. We said there are some conditions that you have to do these things. Number one, you have to build a hotel with space for conventions and meeting space. It's got to be 200 rooms. There hadn't been a hotel built in this area in a long time. The other thing is we're not going to pay for any infrastructure. Any road, any street, any light system, you have to pay for it. You have to put in a pump station, which was $2.7 million, I think it was, at that time, to take that water that used to go in the Stink Creek and make sure it gets to the river. And we're looking for a new sport complex. And they said, okay, we'll give you $1 million for the sport complex. And you have to contribute to the new library. And they said, okay, we'll do that too. So it kind of kick-started three or four things. Our recreation complex is off 24th Street on Dick Downing Boulevard. Has hundreds of thousands of people a year go through that. We have opportunities for soccer, football, baseball, lacrosse, softball. We have a number of tournaments there. They're being held there. And that's really changed the complexion. Obviously, Stink Creek is gone, and the storm sewer that goes through there has been much better situation. We got a new library built. We went from a 23,000-square-foot library into a 67,000-square-foot library. Our economy helped turn around, get us an opportunity to do some things. It had some bumps and bruises along the way. I had a guy call me one night, and he said, you know, all the elements of gaming that people think about, is crime going to go up? Is a mafia going to move in here? But this guy called me about prostitution, and he said, you know, I'm really concerned about the prostitution in Council Bluffs with these casinos coming. And, of course, the standard answer is, I don't think it's going to happen. There isn't a traditional thing that, you know, that we're going to have a lot of prostitution. He said, here's the problem. The same three girls have been working for the last 20 years are getting worn out. We need some new ones. Kind of took me back just a tad. How do you handle that question? Or the guy that called me on the phone, he said, you know, I was running. I said, this is going to be about infrastructure. And he said, well, how do you stand on curbs? And I said, with my feet. That was not the right answer either. So. But it's really been an amazing it's just been kind of an amazing opportunity for a guy that grew up in the West Side to stay with his city this long. But, you know, the people are really the difference makers. You know, I've been through 9 mayors in Omaha. I always kid. I told Gene Stothard, I said, you're the 9th. I can't train anymore. But what's really amazing is that, you know, the nine mayors of Omaha that I've been through, you know, I mean, I've worked with. And each and every one has their own story and their own opportunity. But, you know, everybody that's elected really tries to do the right thing. You know, I mean, my picture on the wall here has, yeah, it has Hal, you know. I got every picture has me and Hal, you know, and we used to argue once in a while, which was pretty easy to do with Al, but it was always an amazing story. And we've had some opportunities that happen. I learned a lesson when I got into City Hall that probably was the best lesson I ever learned. When I walked in, I had a predetermined mindset that me, Tom Hannafin, the new mayor of this city, was going to change the whole idea of how we run government. And that those folk, if they didn't listen to me, what I told them to do, they were going to be out, and we're going to bring new people in. And when I got there, I found out that most public employees, and I'll say most because you can't say 100%, are people who really do care about their city. They care about going to work every day, and they do make a difference. And I think there's a misconception sometimes that public employees are just there to get their dollar, to get their check. And I think if there's anything that I've learned, it's been about them. You walk in the city hall, you try to make sure, you know, you think about government. You walk in the city hall, there's no happiness there. You're there to pay a bill. You're there to get a permit. You're there to complain about something. You got to find out. You're never there just to come in and enjoy yourself. You're there about a problem. And how the employees handle that make a difference. Now, every day isn't a perfect day, and every day people don't appreciate what you have to say. But I've really been enthused the way our city employees have done over the years and really the cooperation of this metro. I personally, and have said this for years, you know, this metro area should be a lot larger than it is. You know, I think we should probably be closer to 2 million than 1 million. And the reason that, and I think it's going to happen, maybe not in my lifetime, but I think we have not even touched the surface of where we're going to be. If you look at the corporate entities that we have in this metro area, the size and the ability they have to do things, it's incredible. We're one of the only metro areas that can offer the things that we have, and sometimes we sell ourselves short. And I think there's just nothing but opportunities. And now we're starting to do a study of how we, eight counties in Omaha, or Nebraska and Iowa, can combine to build this city and this metro area for the future. It's alarming. But it's been a great run. It's been a great time. Had a lot of people to thank. You know, we're going to try this retirement. I said earlier, my wife and I are going to Florida and North Carolina for a few 3 weeks or something before we have to come back to watch grandkids play basketball or whatever we have to do. This will be hard for her to be away from her grandkids this long, but it's going to be harder for her to be around me this long. So we're testing the waters, and we're going to find out whether when we go to Florida, both of us come back, or one of us comes back, and it depends on which one comes back. So thank you.
Thank you. I think you'll agree that he is a good friend, and this is the purpose of the talk today and why the invitation was extended. We feel the neighborliness that he has brought to our community on both sides of the river is irreplaceable, and the trust and the advancement with mutual, I would say, goals now coming up. Tom, you mustn't completely retire. Please be an advisor at least. All right. Gary Kerr now will take some questions, and Tom will answer them.
You bet he's had cataract surgery, and I forgot to bring my glasses up. Between the two of us, we're going to get these questions out. What was your greatest moment as mayor?
Yeah, and I've had that question asked. So what's your greatest moment? I don't think there was a single moment out there that really was a difference maker to me, but I think of the flood of 2011 and the tornado of 88, and to see the ability of people to respond and react and get things done, you know, that makes you pretty proud. Not only the people you work with, but also the people live in the community. I mean, they make a difference. And so those two instances probably were the shining examples, what I think, of people who live in this area.
When the casinos first opened, all of the gambling was done on the license of the dog track. Is that still the basis for casino gambling? Is it the same in Des Moines with the horse track?
And there's two things that happened on gaming. Number one, that they opened up gaming for dog tracks and horse racing. And those were just parimutuel gambling, and that was passed. And then Council Bluffs, Dubuque, Waterloo, and then Des Moines had a horse track. Then a vote came to change the gambling to allow slot operations in dog tracks and also horse tracks. Then came another bill that allowed riverboat gambling. And if you remember that, you had to be a riverboat. And this is what the theory was, is that we wanted to improve tourism and create jobs. And the idea behind the tourism was to put people on a boat and tour the river, both here in the Missouri River and in the Mississippi River. So there were three different steps that happened. So what's happened is the slot operations that were allowed at the dog track and the horse track now have gone to full-blown gaming. And not only are there slots, but there are tables and that activity. That's changed. So not only are they in the slot or in the horse track or the dog tracks, but they're now full operation. And there's been a number of licenses been added across Iowa. The other one was the riverboat. And the vote was, for some history here, the vote came out of the House by one vote and it passed. And so riverboat gambling was passed. We were not allowed to have riverboat gambling in Council Bluffs for 3 years because Sioux City was protected that there would be no competition along the Missouri River except for Sioux City. That congressman or that senator or representative must have had a lot of power. So, and we were a little miffed at it, but we had the dog track going on. But you know, it's the best thing that ever happened to us because we saw all the mistakes that Sioux City did, and I'm not saying they were all bad, but we saw what they didn't do. They put a boat. They paid for a landing and no investment made on ground. So they really didn't gain any money or any opportunity on land. Davenport, they said, we're going to put a boat in and we're going to build a hotel here in a couple years. There hasn't been a boat built. There hasn't been a hotel built since. If you look over in the eastern part of the state, there was one boat that landed, and I think it was Muscatine. They actually put a rope around the side of the dock and opened up a casino, and then all of a sudden it was more favorable if they moved down into New Orleans. So that boat just wrapped up and took off. So when we had the opportunity to do it, we are still the only one that ever required everybody to do everything. So that's why in Iowa, if you want to build a casino now, you have to have a hotel, you have to have convention space, no cost to the local government is because we did it right. But that gaming, there are more licenses out there. Originally, there were only going to be about six, and now I think there's probably 17 licenses.
A couple of questions with the same theme. Is there anything you wanted to do as mayor that you were not able to do? What do you wish you could have gotten done that you couldn't?
It's like being married for 43 years. You know, you look back and what the heck did I do right and what did I do wrong? There are some things that I don't think I could ever go back and say, gee, I wish we would have done this differently. Because, there are some things that aren't perfect out there. But on the same token, I wish we would have probably thought things out a little bit longer in some areas. We've changed roads in some areas 3 or 4 times trying to figure out how to make it work the right way. I mean, for commercial or industrial development. I wish we would have probably bought some land and really invested in the economic development, put the sewers and streets in and have it ready today. I wish we would have done some other things in our retail. But overall, there isn't really much that I didn't like. There are some things I'd like to see completed. Every time I ran for office, I had a list of 10 items that I wanted to complete in the four-year period. And I'd write that list, and I'd put it in my desk, and I'd sit there and I'd say, you know, I want these. I never failed to get any of those 10 done. Now, some were pretty simple. You know, when I first started, I said, you know, these have got to be some simple ones. But some were home runs. And so we were able to complete all those. And that was always my thought is that, you know, have goals and objectives. Some things I wish we could get done is that we're dealing with a humane society today to build a new humane society. I wish that was built and up and running because we're in a situation that we need to do a little bit better in that area. The other thing is a new police station. That is something that is well needed in the city and really would help in the county because we're stuck in a building and we're all together and it's just not working very well. And I wish we could have probably got that done. But after that, you know, the expectations of what we thought we were going to do in 88 and what we got done in 25 years is really pretty good. And I don't think I could ever look back and say, you know, we went the wrong direction. But there are a few things that we'd like to see. And I would hope that Matt and the new council could get a couple of those things done because they're going in the right direction.
What did you enjoy about officiating high school football? Are there any funny or poignant memories?
Well, there are a few. You know, I did it for 40 years. I refereed high school football for 40 years, and I did one game last year because my grandson is now 16, and he's got a car and a girlfriend, and I thought I better change the way. It makes you – all of a sudden you're growing up, and your grandson's driving the car. He's got a girlfriend, and I'm thinking about time for me to go on. But it was a great time. There were four of us that started together 40 years ago. We all played softball together. All of us had done something in college in some athletic event. And we decided that we were going to start. So we started out with junior high and high school football and basketball. Did a lot of junior high stuff. And those games are brutal. I mean, you know, junior high, we used to do three games on a Saturday. So we do a seventh grade game, an eighth grade game, and a ninth grade game. And then when we started doing varsity stuff, we would do a Friday night, then come back and try to do Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Well, my first game I ever did, I got called by this crew that I didn't work with, and they said, hey, we need somebody. One of our guys got hurt at work. Can you come out and fill in? And I said, yeah, I could. One was a police officer, and two of the other guys were farmers, and they were brothers. So they picked me up. We go to Carson, Iowa, stand there, get in the car. They said, all right, kid, here's the deal. Keep those flags in your pocket. Don't have a flag hanging out. You make sure. And when you go in and reach for that flag, that's the penalty. So I'd stand there, and I'm looking at one guy was a farmer, and he always had his hat tilted. You ever see a farmer with a tilted hat? And he stood crooked, and he'd look over here like this. And so I'm the umpire, so I'd have to go over and try to put the ball down where I thought his foot was, but I couldn't tell because the hat was crooked. He was bow-legged, and he was standing crooked, so I'd try to move around like this and finally get it down. So we get through the game, and they said, yeah, kid, you did a great job. And let's go to the bar and have a few beers. I said, well, great. We get to the bar. We got $25 cash to do the game. And so they said, here's the rules, rookie buy. So I did that game for free, and those guys enjoyed the heck out of themselves. And then the other incident I had, I just told a story last night. It was funny. I was working a game up in Underwood, Iowa, and they had this little guy. He was a little, and I was young. I was about 26, 27, a little guy about this tall. He was a coach, and he was a yeller, and they weren't very good. I think they get beat every game by 40. And so anyway, we go early in the game. Kid comes up, and he has a shot, underhand layup like this. The other guy comes down on the ball, and I call a jump ball. This guy jumps off and says that was a foul. And I said, no, it wasn't a foul. So anyway, he kept going on, finally gave him a technical. So go through the game, get done with the game, walk in the coach's room, and here's the locker room where the kids are getting dressed. Here's the coach's room where we shower. And there's a rule. No coach ever walks into a game, into a locker room with referees after the game. You don't do it. So anyway, we're listening to this guy tell him how bad the officiating was, and they could have won the game. And, of course, my Irish temper was moving a little bit at that time, and I thought, you know, that little SOB, you know. And He walks by, opens the door, and steps in and says something about the officiating. And I said, you've got two choices. Walk out that door, or I'm going to stuff you in the locker. He stepped one step forward. I picked him up by the nape of the neck, opened up the locker, stuffed him in, and kicked the door. And he started screaming. And the kids are on the other side. They're laughing because they don't like the guy anyway. So after a few minutes, I let him out. He left, and I thought, you know, my career in refereeing's all over. You know, that Irish temper finally got me. But the athletic director called me and asked me to come back. So that didn't really do any damage to me. But I had a great time. Change in life, and I say this all the time. When I started refereeing 40 years ago, the kids haven't changed and the coaches haven't changed. Still dedicated people that want to make sure that people get an opportunity to participate, and the kids get to participate. Millions of kids play high school football on Friday nights. Hundreds of thousands play on Saturday, and a couple thousand play on Sunday. So Friday night is a very important night for most kids that play high school athletics. And the interesting thing is the only change that I've seen of all those years have been the parents and the fans. The expectations today for your team or your coach or your player is much higher than ever was. Every kid is not going to be starting at the University of Nebraska. Every coach is not going to be undefeated, and every referee cannot make a right call. Pretty soon in baseball, they're just going to have robots out there, and it's never going to be any human error anymore. It's going to be either a strike or a ball. I mean, I just see it changing. So that's the changes.
Mayor, you've been in the job for 25 years. I'm betting that you did not have any opposition running for mayor for a number of terms. Isn't that right? I mean, you've not had any opposition, and you could have had all kinds of opportunities, I think, to run for other office. You must have had people coming in, come on, Hannafin, you know, you got to run for this office. This is your opportunity. Did you take a look at those? Did you ever think about it? Did you move in that direction at any time?
Well, I did. I was asked to run against Greg Gansky, who was a congressman out of Des Moines area, and that was when the I-80 corridor is what it was, and he happened to be a Republican, and I happened to be a registered Democrat. And so they came and talked to me about going to run for office. And I thought, you know, if you're going to do this, you better look at it and see where you go. Greg had a lot of money. He had about $3 million in his pot. Well-respected congressman who had defeated a long-term congressman in Iowa. Well-respected, pretty much Republican area. And so I went and looked at it. And so I went over to the Democratic I went over to this Democratic meeting, and so I got in there, and I grew up a Democrat. My dad worked for the railroad, my grandfather, my grandmother had three pictures on the wall. It was of JFK, or one of the Kennedys, I take that back, a Kennedy, a Pope, and FDR. And we didn't have any artwork in the house, so it was those three pictures. And she said, you know, without people like that, you wouldn't have a place to live. The union saved your job for you, your dad, and everybody. So that's the way I grew up. So I go over to this meeting, and they stand up, and they said, would you introduce yourself? And I stood up, and I said, I'm Tom Hannafin. I'm from Western Iowa, Council Bluffs, mayor, da-da-da. And tell a little story about yourself. So the first question that came up was on abortion. And I'm sitting there going, I'm running for Congress, and it's on abortion. And this has been 15 years ago. And I said, well, I'm Catholic. And I believe in the Catholic doctrine, and I've never really believed, I don't believe in abortion. Well, I got a couple hisses and boos, and I thought, God, what are they talking about? Next one was on a bill had just been signed by then Bill Clinton. It was Congress on the international trade. And the union members on the other side of the room said, how do you think this should work? And I said, well, I think it should work. The president and the Congress would work together. It looks like a real opportunity in the future. And they told me, that is not going to work because it's going to hurt union jobs. So the third question was, we're the central committee of the Democratic Party, and if we call you and tell you how to vote on an issue and you got to listen to us, are you going to agree with us? And I said, you know, I don't know anybody on this central committee. But I said, if I'm elected, I represent everybody that lives in the district. And I don't care if they're Democrat or they're Republican or independent. I represent them. And they didn't like that. So I got in my car. I drove home. I was so goddamn mad. I was ready to spit. And one guy said, well, let's go to Washington, D.C. So I went to Washington, D.C., DCCC. They said, we can give you money. Then you go over to the House. You go to the Senate. And then I ended up at the White House. Bill Clinton was the president. They brought me into the White House. Sat me down. We went downstairs in the basement, and they said, you know, Tom, I heard you're going to run against Greg Ganske, and the president would really appreciate it, you know, an opportunity. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm in the White House. And so anyway, the phone rings. Bill, how was your trip to Saudi Arabia? Yeah, I've got Tom Hannafin here in the room. And, I think he's going to run against Greg Ganske. And he said, Bill said, thank you, congratulations, and hangs up. I'm thinking, what the hell is this? Yeah, is there mirrors out here? So I got done. I walked out. They sent me out the front door of the White House. I walked downtown. I was going to meet some people. In fact, my wife was there. We had a trip going on. And she said, how'd it go? And I said, I'm going to tell you, don't talk to me. I'm the guy. She said, what do you mean? I'm the guy. I said, I don't even belong in this room with you people. I am the man. I've just gone through 3 hours of being told what a man I was. Well, at the end of the day, I looked back at it, and I thought, you know, there's more to this being a congressman than I ever want to be. You know, the farther you're away from your constituents, the worse performer you are. You know, when I get out of the car today to fill up my gas tank, someone's going to stop by, and they're going to be my constituent, and they're going to say, hey, how about the street on 24th Street? Or the lady came in our office just before because they're getting thrown out of her house because of something. Or the guy can call and say, hey, I've got a problem with somebody at the sanitation department. I didn't want that, to have that opportunity. I just didn't feel I was part of that. It just isn't who I am. You know, the farther away you're from constituents, the less responsive you are. So for me, it just wasn't in the cards.
We've got a little time left here. Tom, if you could talk about fighting the flood of a couple of years ago. I mean, we had our challenges on the Omaha side, but boy, in Council Bluffs, I mean, the entire West End was threatened. And were there times when you said, wow, I don't know if we're going to make it through this or not?
Well, there were. There's a couple guys that sat there every day and saw it for 100, and not that I was counting, 114 days we were in flood stage. And I'll be serious, if you would have been and saw what we had to see, you know, Epley Airfield could have gone away very easily. Had they not responded to Epley Airfield the way they did, you could have lost all of Epley Airfield, Carter Lake, this downtown area could have very easily been underwater. And what they were able to do to preserve this is remarkable. For us, you know, we have 28.5 miles of levee. And it protects a large portion of our community. I look back in 1952, the plans for evacuation in 52 were 3,200 people. Our evacuation plans were 39,000 people. And that didn't include the number of people that the businesses that would be affected. When we went into our EOC room and built it, there were certain people that couldn't go away. I mean, they had to be here. You know, they were held accountable. No vacations. No time off, split some shifts and get around, but you had to be there. And some of these people would work 12, 14 hours a day and then be on call when it happened. The remarkable thing that I saw was when we set the EOC room, just to give you an idea, the commander sat here, and it wasn't me by any stretch, but it was Alan Byers, and then the room set up from there. And we were on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When I said in the flood of 1988 that the media, we controlled it, in today's world, they control us. You know, the Twitter, the tweet, Facebook has become a real tool for us and a real advantage during a situation like that. The media has to respond. So we had some breakpoints. 4th of July, we lost the pump station on Veterans Highway. We saw a small. We already had a meeting every morning at 7 o'clock, 7:30. We had to meet. There was a crack like this at 7:30, and by the time I left at about noon, it was about like this. And then when I got the call at 5 o'clock, we had lost the pump station. You know, that was pretty scary. or the night I was going home, just left the EOC room about 7:30, and I got a call from the Corps of Engineers, and he said, Tom, really worried about that sand boil off 24th Street. He said, I just got a picture of it. I'm in Kansas City. He said, I don't know if that's going to make – he said, that kind of looks what happened in Hamburg. And I said, I just left the EOC room. I said, we were just talking about we're going to have somebody do some things for us. They're actually going to put a sand blanket on there tomorrow. He said, you know, I don't know if tomorrow's soon enough. So I go back to the EOC room, two engineers, one from California and one from local, and we got in the car and we drove out and looked at the sand boil. Now, I don't, you know, sand boils are all different to me, but this one was actually sucking sand out of the levee, and it was moving this way. You could see it pulling the sand out like this. It was more going up than down. And so the local engineer and the guy from, I think he was from California, they looked at it, looked around. They said, you know, if we put some sandbags here and some sandbags there, I think we can really slow it down. So they put these sandbags down, and all of a sudden when they got done, it was squirting up in the air. And the sand was not leaking this way. So they had kind of changed that. And in that ditch were people that were tearing down trees and shrubbery and getting ready for that sand blanket to come the next day. And I called back, and I said, you know, Colonel, I think we got it solved. And he said, well, I'm going to have one of our people come by and look at it. And so they did, and they said, you know, we got through. So next morning, 6:30, they're pouring in that sand blanket. 2 days later, they build another levee. You know, to protect it because that's how close it was. So we were lucky, the whole area. I mean, you think about the economic loss that we could have had in this metro area. It would have been phenomenal. You know, when you think about it, it was incredible. Good news, we learned a lot about ourselves internally, I mean, as a staff, that we had to cooperate and make things happen. There was nobody that was a superstar. Everybody came to work every day and had to do their job. We found some younger people in our organization that really elevated themselves because they were put under the gun and they accepted the charge and they became better people. We also found out that some of the people that will be retiring, like myself, that there are people that are going to be able to step in those spots and take them over internally. So I think Omaha probably found the same thing. It was a remarkable 114 days. My mother lives on 38th and D, and her sump pump ran for 125 straight days. And she was, mom's 98, so I go there every day and check with her. I said, she goes, how's the flood today? And I said, well, pretty good. She says, how's the basement? And I said, it's dry. She said, that's good, because she couldn't go down the steps. We blocked the steps off from her going, but she wouldn't move out. And the neighbors would say, when she moves, I'm gone. So I said, Mom, you're 95 years old, and everybody looks up at you. So, yeah, it wasn't much fun.
Well, we're just about out of time here, but we do have time for one final question. As you retire from the mayor's office, do you foresee your golf game improving or degrading?
Well, there's been a discussion that my golf score has got better since I've been mayor. And they questioned whether I spent more time in the mayor's office or on the golf course. So I look to improve my golf score, if at all possible. That's what I'm going to do in January, is get to play some golf, and I hope that'll get better.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a talk by Tom Hanifin, retired mayor of the city of Council Bluffs, Iowa. Mayor Hanifin has been Council Bluffs mayor for 28 years. His tenure as mayor ended last Thursday when Republican Matt Welsh was sworn in as the newly elected mayor of Council Bluffs. Mr. Hanifin talked about his years in public office, both on the Council Bluffs City Council and as mayor. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, November 21st, 2013, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be this Thursday, January 16th at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Douglas County Attorney Don Klein. He'll talk about some of the challenges faced daily by the Douglas County Attorney's Office. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 300 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.